Welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy 40 Podcast with myself, John DeBar, and my co-host, Mr. Matt Walker. We're brought to you by Expand the Box Score. Use the promo code 40 to get 4 days for free if you're looking for some advanced stats. Good stuff over there. We are now entering NFL Week 6. The bye weeks are upon us. Walk, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And while we're not read experts here, we are Expand the Box Score supporters. So go check out Symbol Exchange and Thrive Fantasy, both promo code XTB to get some trials there and some free access to the Expand the Box Score database. So mutually beneficial for you and for your investments, whether to be on Thrive Fantasy's prop picks or Symbol Exchange. So go check those things out. But I'm doing good. My Eagles, unfortunately, won on Sunday. I didn't watch the game as I had planned. So, of course they won because, I'm only able to suffer through the defeats as will occur in a game I'm sure we'll talk about on Thursday Night Football this week. But, the old Sam Darnold came out to play through like three terrible interceptions. We had a block punt. It was literally like everything but offense. Our offense still looked like shit in the game. Jalen Hurts still not impressive in my opinion. Ran the ball well as he has wanted to do because he's an athlete, but didn't throw it well. So mixed bag for me, but no complaints. A lot of fantasy success last week. How about you?
Yeah. We were talking about before we started recording the leagues where I am expecting to win. I did. The leagues where I'm kind of tanking, I lost. So things, nothing really shocking, but with the bye week starting, one thing I wanted to kind of throw on you and see what your live reaction was without giving you any preview of this. So I have noticed these first, 5 weeks without the byes, my teams that I thought were good were not as good as I thought. And I'm beginning to see a big error in my thought process with team construction. I've got a lot of depth, and I have a feeling I'm going to run through these bye weeks and do really well in all my leagues. However, I'm starting to notice at full strength, I don't have the high-end star power to be a pretty noticeable, hey, this team is a championship contender, because when the fantasy playoffs start, you're going to be at full strength again, barring, any unforeseen shit with injuries. And it kind of makes sense looking back over my last several fantasy seasons where I'm almost a lock to make the playoffs in any leagues where I'm trying to. And then even where I'm number one seed, I get my dick kicked in the first game I play in the playoffs and that's it. And I'm starting to realize I have a lot of teams with lots of depth, but I don't have that real high-end star power. So do you think I'm doing this wrong? And what are you how do you do your teams? And then what's a remedy to fix it, especially these older leagues where, no one's looking to trade for some of these depth guys, at least with anything worth a shit. What am I going to do with a fourth-round rookie pick? Nothing.
Yeah, and I feel you. You just have to have the studs, to win in most of these leagues. And having depth is just our ability to identify talent. But I can have leagues littered with, the Darnell Mooneys and the Laviska Shenault sitting on my bench who are good, who can win you a week, but aren't necessarily just set it and forget it starting wide receivers. So yeah, I can look at my teams and be like, man, I got. My depth is beautiful. My bench is better than anyone's bench in this entire league. But then you find yourself with decisions far too often as well. So while I think the solution is to consolidate, easier said than done. I think we talked about it a few weeks ago on a podcast. No one wants to trade anymore. No one. I mean, literally someone has to just abuse you to accept a trade anymore. Like mutually beneficial trades don't even get done anymore. They have to feel as though they destroyed you in the deal. And while I always want to win my deals, I'm just trying to make my team better. At the end of the day, I don't even care about giving a little bit more to accomplish that, because the end game every year is to be first place, right? Second place, most leagues, gives you a little bit of something. Maybe you're a total points league and you get a little bit of something, but neither of those are a sense of accomplishment. Maybe they get you back your league fee. You want to win the league, So I hear you that you kind of look at your team and, know, better days will probably be ahead because you have that filler, you know, to play the bye week game while a lot of other teams don't. But yeah, you just have to take an honest stock of your team and say, my full strength versus X team in the league's full strength, am I good enough, you know, to win this thing? And if not, you almost have to overpay, you know, to get those. You got to look at the teams that are, you know, go through 5 weeks, 1-4 or 0-5 with, like, let's just say I'm looking at RB1 right now, Derrick Henry, who seems as though he will never break down, but maybe there's a losing team in your league that has him and you have to go with an overpay of like an alpha running back plus a receiver and give him youth again to get there, to get your Derrick Henry on your team. Although that guy could crater your team a year from now, because when he falls, he's going to fall hard and fast. Yes. You know, so it's, are you willing to make those trades to win now, knowing it's going to compromise your future? And I guess, you know, how much do you want to win? Because Derrick Henry is going to require a massive overpay. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in all likelihood, whoever has Derrick Henry is probably not 1-4, you know, just in what he's done alone the last couple of weeks. But I don't know, going down the list, I mean, does Alvin Kamara have the same shine that he had a year ago? I would say nope. No. So maybe he's become attainable. But most of the other younger guy, I mean, Joe Mixon is currently RB3 on the season. I mean, that's standard. Let me update so we can speak accordingly, because I was like, that doesn't sound right. Yeah, Joe Mixon takes a precipitous fall to RB13 when we go to PPR. I was like, that didn't look right.
Really? 3 to 13 just based on the catches?
He has 8 receptions on the season for 31 yards. I mean, he lost all the receiving work to Samaje Perine this past week, but he hasn't gotten the targets that I really thought he was going to get in this offense. For Christ's sake, Zach Moss has 8 for 94 and a touchdown receiving. Zach Moss has been a bigger receiving threat than Joe Mixon has, but you know, regardless, you know, I mean, look at the, you know, go after these older running backs, potentially go after the older receivers, you know, that, you know, their shelf life, it isn't what it used to be. The Davante Adams, I mean, they're still mega producers. So again, you're going to have to pay out the nose for them, but that's probably what it's going to take to separate yourself, you know, in those type of leagues.
Yeah, I'm starting to realize they're just not at, like you said, at full strength. To full strength, my quote unquote really good teams aren't better than the other really good teams. The next 10 weeks, I'm probably likely to go 8-2, 7-3, 9-1 in most leagues because I've got a ton of depth, and I'm going to go and make the playoffs. I'm going to go into the playoffs, pat myself on the back, feeling good, and then I'm going to get my dick kicked in again. So, yeah, I got to shake up the way I've constructed some of these teams. But the flip side is, if you go star heavy, you're one injury, two injuries away from your team totally tanking. But I think we talked about this during the offseason at some point. In one of my leagues, one best ball league, where I had McCaffrey and I won 2 years ago. Then last year my team sucked because he was out. But with him out, I got early draft picks. And then this year my team's killing everybody again, even with McCaffrey banged up. I mean, I got a couple games out of him. Eckler's on that team. He had a monster start to the year. So I almost think it's even worth it to take that risk of losing that star for a year, because it's only going to help you. It hurts now, but it's going to help you long term, because you lose that guy for the year. Okay, you haven't been picking in the top half of drafts in, you know, 4 or 5 years with that team. Now with this guy out, you're going to be able to finally get some decent draft capital that you haven't had. So, yeah, I think this year for me is going to be a lot of, hey, take these three decent guys whose name you know for your one good guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's and listen, it's a high wire act. We know that, right? You know, once you get super top heavy, yeah, everyone's just one injury away from irrelevancy, you know, struggling. Like, now you don't have the depth, you know, to cover up that Clyde Edwards-Helaire injury or the like. So it's, you know, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. But you know, I think honest assessment is probably the, you know, the best approach, because I'm not, regardless of how long I think a league is going to last, I'm not worried about my team 4 or 5 years from now. To do that, you're not doing your current team. You're doing it a disservice. I still treat these like, once the season starts, these are redraft leagues for me. I'm going to do anything necessary to win until the point comes where I'm fully aware that I'm not winning this. And then I go right back to the dynasty mentality. And it becomes moving old assets, acquiring younger assets, getting draft picks. It's, but in the moment, you know, I treat it like redraft. I will move off a player in a second if I think it's going to make my team better for this year. I will. I'm not worried about first round picks. I'm not worried about second round picks. You know, like I moved my first plus to get Joe Mixon going into this season, and I couldn't have been happier about it. Now, it hasn't panned out as I want. Joe Mixon's still, you know, running back 13 on the season, but, you know, not, I expected like running back 6, literally from Mixon on the season, but I'd make that trade again in a second rather than whomever went at pick, you know, 110 in my.
Yeah, I need to, I got to shake things up. One last guy. I mean, we had some injuries to talk about. Some other stuff happened. Real quick thoughts: is David Njoku going to happen finally? he had a monster. Obviously, his 53 points, depending on your scoring on the year, 31 last week, but he had 12 in week one. He's been involved quite a bit. Could it? Would you trade him if you had him finally get something, or do you think?
David Njoku is tight end 13 on the season. He's got more points than Tyler Higbee, Jared Cook, George Kittle, Zach Ertz, Logan Thomas, Johnny Smith. You know, just looking down, Austin Hooper, way more. Austin Hooper's got 26.7 PPR points on the same team where Njoku has 46. Now, that's literally on two games. His other three games, unstartable. Week one, good. I think it was like 10 points or something like that. Weeks two, three, and four, nothing. Like, literally would have lost you weeks. And then largely on the strength of a 70-yard touchdown catch, like where I think he like shook off a tackle or two, that made this last week for him. I mean, he's only got 260 and one touchdown on the season, so 190 and no touchdowns on 13 catches in, you know, the remainder of the games. Looks like he actually missed a game too. He's only listed as credit for four games, so explains the goose egg in one of those middle weeks. So not even as bad as maybe I thought he. So, but still, two good games. Not one great game, one good game, two shit games. Yeah, you know, but that's tight end in a nutshell. I am holding Njoku. You and I both love David Njoku. I just hope and pray. He wanted out of Cleveland a year ago. They paid Austin Hooper all that money. Then they go and draft Harrison Bryant. The writing's on the wall. Dude's just hyper athletic. Yeah, maybe it just took him a little longer to figure out. Going to be 26 years old next year. Land him somewhere where they just use him in this kind of like move tight end role. And I think David Njoku could still happen. I'm not moving him because no one's valuing him worth a shit, honestly. Even in like a tight end premium league, you're going to get these underpays. So I'd still be holding my nose and holding my Njokus for one more year because I could probably guarantee whomever they play this week, David Njoku is going to get two catches for 14 yards.
any thoughts on any of the injuries? I know Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Saquon Barkley, Daniel Jones, Russell Wilson. Nobody incredible is stepping up behind these guys. I mean, Darrell Williams, Devontae Booker. Who's Daniel Jones? I already forgot. Old giraffe neck.
Big old Mike Glennon.
Mike Glennon. And Russell Wilson, obviously, is Geno Smith, who looked okay in a little bit, but full game he's going to get exposed. So I'm not rushing out to pick any of these guys up off waivers. I haven't picked up anybody. In most of my leagues, I still have 100% of my fab left.
Listen, I've been lighting that shit on fire so far this year, but it's because I'm willing. I churn the bottom of most of my rosters. So I'm going after guys, whether it's in redraft or dynasty. And you know, if they hit, they hit. If not, on to the next week. But good for you to hold on. Devontae Booker, I think, could be appealing for short term. There's absolutely no chance that Barkley plays this week, and I think it's probably possible that he doesn't play another week. So you tell me 2 weeks of Booker, who got literally the Saquon Barkley treatment in that offense, 16 carries and 4 targets, 20 opportunities, 19 touches, a rushing and a receiving touchdown. Now, it wasn't pretty. His yards per carry sucked. His yards per reception sucked. It's because the Giants suck, and they keep getting rid of what injuries. They lost Galladay, too, who you didn't even reference to a hyperextended knee. But we don't talk about Kenny Galladay anymore because he's literally irrelevant. He signed a massive contract past his prime already with an injury history, and it just continues to pile up. But that's what's letting to probably all of Twitter chagrin Kadarius Toney happening.
I didn't know Galladay got hurt. I just saw the goose egg and thought, oh, another stinker.
Now, hyperextended his knee. So he's probably missing next week as well. Daniel Jones is questionable in the concussion protocol. Barkley is 100% not playing. I'd be a little skeptical of Devontae Booker without Daniel Jones because Mike Glennon is nothing, and they are going against the Rams at home. So that could be ugly. But you got to chase volume to a certain degree, and Devontae Booker is going to get the volume. No running back in Kansas City. I don't care if CH is out. No one's going to get the volume. They're going to split it between Darrell Williams and Jerick McKinnon by and large. So it probably makes that backfield totally irrelevant all over again. More passing from Mahomes and company. So I wouldn't be chasing the CH side. And then, I mean, you're not starting Glennon with Daniel Jones out, even in a tight end premium, and you're not starting Geno Smith with Russell Wilson out, or sorry, tight end premium, even in a super flex league. So there's not a lot to be had, but I do think that Devontae Booker is probably worth the fab for a 1 to 2 week fix. Diving a little deeper into these injuries, you know, the Russell Wilson supposedly out through his bye with a mallet finger injury or the like. So it's ugly for Russell Wilson and company. I think they said that's like a 6 to 8 week recovery. Can't really do anything with his hand while it heals. So, you know, abandon ship, I would say, like, temper expectations on the entire Seattle offense. DK Metcalf probably tears down from a wide receiver 1 to 2. Tyler Lockett goes from probably a 2 to a flex. Chris Carson will probably get volume when he comes back, but Alex Collins isn't going away. And you certainly don't want to trust Geno Smith with any type of extensive starts under his belt. So not a good time. There was also another one. Joe Burrow had like a throat contusion after the game, had to go to the hospital. Everything came back okay with him, and he's already been cleared to proceed. So don't have to worry about any of those Bengals pass catchers at present with Joe Burrow's throat being intact. So anything you wanted to touch on with those injuries, John?
No, like I said, nobody stepping up is exciting to me. I know if I'm like in dire need, I might throw a few fab bucks at these guys where they're available. Most leagues, they're not even available. So moving on to the good and bad of the week. I guess we'll been starting at the good. We'll stay there, work our way from top to bottom. Highest scoring game of the week and highest scoring team of the week, Kansas City, not a surprise, looking to score 31 against the Washington football team, whose name has been dragged through the news. Total in that game is 55.5. Again, we do this every week at Kansas City. It's pretty narrow distribution tree, although people are starting to kind of shut down Kelce and Hill, and the team is sucking for it. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's with the bye weeks, especially now. You're not going to pull those guys out of your lineup. But I'm not playing any of them with the confidence I was 6 weeks ago.
I'm going to play both of them with the confidence that I was 6 weeks ago.
Oh, no. This week, yes. Okay. I mean,
yeah. Fire them up. I yes, mean, now I have a bone to pick. Tyreek Hill, I was a Tyreek Hill touchdown away from a plus 12,000 payout on a ticket that would have netted me, as yeah, with any type of investment on that, a nice Sunday night football payday. I called Dawson Knox, I called Manny Sanders, I had, you know, a couple yardage guys sprinkled in, and then I went with Kelce and Hill as touchdowns on the KC side. I thought that was the chalk. I was like, they're both scoring, it's gonna be a high scoring affair, these two dudes are gonna score. And then game just keeps ticking along, ticking along, ticking along. Kelce finally gets in on that little smoke screen, and then Kelce gets his bell rung in the game from like Jordan Poyer. And I was like, oh, well, he's out. So now all the targets are going to Tyreek Hill at the end of this game. Two plays later, a muff snap in the shotgun from Patrick Mahomes, where they end up turning it over, giving it back to the Bills, and c'est la vie to my payout. So I was none too pleased with Tyreek Hill last week, but he did have 13 targets, and most teams can't defend him the way the Bills can with, you know, a bracket coverage with two all pro D-backs, you know, locking him up. And Kelce the same. I mean, I think he wasn't short of targets either. And even him being locked up, I mean, he was probably still a top five tight end. He was tight end 6 on the day. He had 10 targets. So they're still getting all the volume in the world. And now with CEH hurt, like I said earlier, there's going to be less going to the running back position. So another week of Josh Gordon get integrated in this offense. They did pepper Mecole Hardman as well. He got a fair share of targets in the game. But this is going to be all passes, all day, all wheels up. even though KC's been an epic disappointment, Washington is, you know, the cure all for this offense. And they're going to Mahomes minimum 350 and 3 touchdowns passing in this game, which probably is like a norm for him. Yeah. But just, yeah, you go right back to the well, but certainly not as afraid of those type of players when you're going against them in fantasy. I mean, I know Hill had that blow up week, like against the Eagles. Of course he did. Well,
that's the thing. But the potential is always hiding.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about Kelce. I mean, even in a shitty game, 6 for 57 and a touchdown, it was a bad game for him. And it was tight end 6 in PPR.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and he still had tied for the second most targets at the position. The only one that had more was Mark Man Andrews, who was part of my epic destruction of Mike Yeck in our GOAT Dynasty League. Yeah, 11 catches, 147 yards, 2 touchdowns, plus what, 2 2-point conversions? Mark Andrews just took over the entire fourth quarter of that game and rubbed a lot of people's noses in it. But yeah, don't be afraid of anything on the KC side. As far as Washington goes, did you see that the Antonio Gibson, I think you're the one that actually put in a DM to me, it's a stress fracture of his shin that, you know, Dr. Chow said, this thing doesn't get better, like, except with like time and like not using it, like literally off-season, like rest. Or like, you know, it's so. It can only get worse, is the only thing that can happen with this injury for Antonio Gibson. And he was already fading a little bit. Like, yeah, he was able to get 2 touchdowns in that game, but 20 carries for 60 yards. They just didn't use J.D. McKissic, which was shocking to me. But I'm a little afraid for our boy Antonio Gibson, especially if things keep going in the direction they are, where this Washington team isn't competitive. Where is the value of keep force feeding this guy volume week in and week out if you're not a contender this year? He could get shut down on the back end of the season, which means everyone should have a Jared Patterson at the end of their dynasty bench or even in deeper redraft leagues, because there is a world where he's getting meaningful carries in the fantasy playoffs and winning people weeks, because where was Antonio Gibson still was only running back 13 on the week, because he only had 2 receptions for 12 yards and he lived on those 2 touchdowns, 72 total yards and 2 catches. It was the 2 touchdowns that saved his day. And that's kind of, he's lived on touchdown volume because he hasn't gotten the receptions that we had anticipated. So a little afraid there, and not much else other than your boy Terry McLaurin that's even startable in that offense right now. Logan Thomas is hurt. Taylor Heineke, maybe. I mean, if
not, you know, what we were thinking.
In a deep super flex, but Curtis Samuel back out again, too. I mean, it's ugly. It is ugly in Washington. So I don't know how. What's that game? Did you say 7? What's that game? Is that what the spread is on the game?
6.5.
6.5. Ugh. Paint me confused. I mean, it's, I guess it's because Kansas City's defense has been like literally one of the worst in the NFL. They just they make teams look even better than they are. I mean, the Bills are one of the top offenses, but Kansas City lets everyone go off on them.
Kansas City doesn't cover, so their lines have been coming down. So this could be the final week of overcorrection where you get them, you know, give me Kansas City with a touchdown, just winning by 7 wins.
Yeah.
It's a very good bet, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and they are on the road, I guess. Maybe there's some value to that. But, yeah, this is another week. I'm still going full Chiefs kingdom. Yeah, here. They're gonna destroy the Washington football team.
Second highest scoring team this week. Again, not a shocker. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 29.5 on Thursday night against your Philadelphia Eagles. Also, third highest scoring total this week at 52. Again, with Tampa, you're going Brady. I know he banged up his thumb or his hand at some point in that game, but all indication is that he's a full go. Spin the wheel at wide receiver, you know, Godwin isn't doing what we want, but he still is part of the offense. Evans has had some big weeks. Antonio Brown has had some big weeks. Just Brady being Brady, the ball gets spread around. Good luck trusting anybody. And when Gronk comes back, it becomes an even more muddled mess. And it looks like Fournette has officially taken over, you know, till he fumbles or pisses off.
For everyone else, John, right? We've been here the whole time. Yeah.
Correct.
Rojo.
But yeah, I mean, you know, there's no surprises here in Tampa. You know who you're playing. There's no sleepers here either.
No, yeah, well said. I did do a little digging. I knew, one, I had to look into my Eagles game, and then, two, with the total, I knew we were going to talk about it. And just as a quick point of reference, doing my homework, these teams are both top five in pace. You know, so they're moving. There's going to be offense. You know, no shocker, the second highest total of the week, there's going to be offense. But no, both these teams, you know, are high pace of play teams. So neither is going to drag the other down. Philly, surprisingly, 10th in pass DVOA, which I haven't seen watching them personally. I thought they were a worse team than that. But they're 23rd in rush DVOA, which their rush defense was a strength of theirs in years past. And when it's Leonard Fournette, 100-yard touchdown game, is just barreling down the Thursday night football slate. And then Tampa Bay, conversely, is 18th in pass DVOA. I thought they were worse than that. I mean, they get thrown all over. They're on like Richard Sherman off the street cornerbacks, you know, at present. Third in rush DVOA, which everyone knows you don't run on them. So this is unless Miles Sanders gets to 10 targets that Miles Gaskin got a week ago type, you better be afraid of getting like 5 points from Miles Sanders in this one. Bigger Kenny Gainwell game, and I think Devontae Smith goes bonkers in this game. But to your point, Tampa Bay, it's, you know, pick your poison. Two touchdowns for Antonio Brown and Mike Evans last week. Godwin in a bad game still had 7 for 70. That was a letdown game, 14 PPR points. It could flip on a dime. I mean, this could be Godwin two touchdown game very easily. Still, there's not going to be any Gronk. He doesn't look like he's even remotely close to coming back and playing. So at least the passes are literally just going to those three guys. He's not targeting the tight end without Gronk in there. So there is a value to be had with Gronk out, and it's mostly a three-headed monster with that offense.
You mentioned a few names real quick. How did Gaskin have his? I get it was through the air, but like the 1 week, I'm like, oh,
everyone's
easily,
at him.
Easily won't play him. Gaskin. He goes off, and then on the Philly side, what is the deal with Jalen Reagor? Do you play that guy? Do you not play him? I've been plugging him in lineups all year where I could use him, and he's done nothing. As a Philly guy, what should I be doing here?
I still blame Jalen Hurts. I'm just gonna stay over here on my Jalen Hurts soapbox, and that he's just not a good passing quarterback, and he compromises the quality of the entire offense. Rager did have 5 targets in the game. He was tied with Miles Sanders for third on the team. Mm-hmm. Only Devonta Smith and Zach Ertz had more. But Zach Ertz had 6 targets, had 1 catch on the game. Let me just explain to you that. Miles Sanders had 5 targets. He had 6 yards receiving on the game. This is the caliber of offense that we're dealing with, you know, as far as the pass goes. And the Panthers, young, aggressive, exciting defense, they're not shut down in any capacity. They can be had. Just nothing with the Eagles. I mean, Rager's 3 for 24. Yeah, I can't really tell you to keep going back to the well on him. Yeah. There's just been a litany of just inexcusable mistakes. Rager going out of bounds and coming back in on a touchdown a few weeks ago. Devonta Smith going out of bounds, coming back in on a touchdown 2 weeks ago. These terrible pick plays that they run in the red zone where the guy that's supposed to do like kind of the ghost pick always runs into the D-back on the touchdown, then it gets called back for pass interference. Like, this is just coaching. Your receivers need to be better than this. They can't be that close to the boundary on these deep balls. They cannot literally run into D backs on these type of called plays, or you have to scrap the shit and start and try something else. But yeah, it's just not working so far this year. So I'm still Team Rager. I am. I'm hanging on by a, you know, by a thread at this point in time, but you cannot start him.
Yeah. I'm going to bench him.
He's not a flex.
So he'll probably go off.
Anyway, good. I hope so. I mean, this is the game, right? I mean, this is where Hurts has to throw for 350 yards and probably 4 touchdowns for this to be competitive, because you are zero running. I wouldn't even expect a big rushing day from Hurts, you know, specifically. So he's going to have to go toe to toe with Tom Brady throwing the ball, and he is not physically capable of doing that. So Dallas Goedert did get put on the COVID list, and it's a Thursday game. So
He's out.
He ain't playing. Which means sneaky Zach Ertz is going to do some dirt on Thursday night football in like a throwback game. He's going to have like 5 catches for 40 yards and 1 or 2 touchdowns in this game.
Well, bookending Thursday, the start of the week with Monday night football, closing the week. Buffalo is our next highest scoring team, 29.75 projected points. And their game is the second highest total at 54. Playing at Tennessee. Buffalo just, you know, trounced Kansas City pretty handedly. They look really good so far this year, a lot of it through Dawson Knox and Emmanuel Sanders. I'm still waiting for digs to finally happen. I thought last week was the week against Kansas City. Wasn't it? Could be this week against Tennessee, but I'm not holding out hope. I mean, the guy's obviously still playable. I think he's like wide receiver 24 in the year. So not what you're hoping to get. He's still a serviceable wide receiver, but I'm still waiting for one of these big games. I need that guy to pop.
Yeah, no argument here. And just looking down, Stephon Diggs is out on the year.
Oh, but real quick,
26 now. So he's not even a wide receiver two right now.
Do you even trust any of the other guys, though? That's where I'm at. Like, I'll put Dawson Knox in happily, you know, especially with Byron. Yeah,
you will.
You can play Moss pretty regularly at running back now. He's getting enough work that you could plug him in there and hope for RB2 finish or better. And obviously you're putting Diggs in there. But are you putting, before bye weeks, were you putting Emmanuel Sanders in there being like, all right, here we go? Like, none of these other guys were even playable.
I mean, full disclosure, I traded Emmanuel Sanders in a number of places last year and this year. But that plus 12,000 ticket that I said Tyreek Hill screwed me on, I had Emmanuel Sanders in for a touchdown. Boy. I liked him in this game with the offense and what Sanders has done. He's kept our boy Gabriel Davis in check. Sanders has looked amazing. I mean, listen, I didn't see two touchdowns coming from him. But listen, he's running back. He's wide receiver 21 on the season, largely on the strength of this last game where he scored two touchdowns. But he's been a better asset than Stephon Diggs. And Diggs is still commanding all that attention. Unlike KC, who does not have that beta wide receiver to benefit from it, Buffalo does. They force-fed the ball to Stephon Diggs last year. I mean, it was like ungodly, the amount of targets that he had last year. Well, now the emergence of Dawson Knox, the signing of Emmanuel Sanders, utilizing the running backs a little bit in the passing game, they don't have to give Diggs the volume that he was before. So while still a great receiver, you know, 47 targets through 5 weeks. I mean, he's not even seeing 10 targets a game. Stephon Diggs, the explosion will come, and it's perfectly set up on Monday Night Football against this terrible Tennessee secondary. But I don't think you can bank on it. I'd be running Emmanuel Sanders back if I had him on any of my teams. He's earned flex status, you know, until further notice, just because of what Josh Allen's doing. And you said Zach Moss separated himself significantly from Devin Singletary, not only in quality, you know, the high value touches, but he's just such a better receiver than Devin Singletary is. What only confused me about Zach Moss, I don't know if you watched the game, it didn't look like he was running at any point in the game. He was taking this like Le'Veon Bell, like glidey, like kind of what it to like a new level where he was just like old folk power walking through the mall type running against the Kansas City Chiefs, and it blew my mind. Like,
I watched it. I didn't notice. I have to
take
go
a look back.
And
it's just like, what is he? What's going on here? Like, does he think this is a scrimmage? You know, bullets aren't firing here. I was blown away by how Zach Moss plays football, but he's way better than Devin Singletary. So,
damn. Next highest scoring team, and this is becoming a, you know, we started doing this year. Becoming a bit of a pattern with some of these teams. Rams, 29 points, another team over 4 touchdowns. And again, it's a team that the production is largely very narrow distribution tree. There's not anybody surprising you here, waiting for the Bobby Woods to finally emerge this year, because I picked him up in a few spots, which I never had him. I hated that guy forever, so it's just my curse. I'm sorry to everybody who has him this year, but it's all going through Cooper Kupp. Henderson's been serviceable. Sony Michel gets his little splash touches, but I like him better in best ball. I don't think I'm putting him in a lineup, barring injuries or bye week necessity, but it's very, very narrow distribution here. We're not getting the production we thought out of the tight end. Not much to say for the Rams, despite having this high total.
Yeah, I want to touch on two things here. One, I want to jump back to the last game because we didn't say anything about Tennessee. Derrick Henry's been an absolute animal in that high total game, but the Bills are one of the best run defenses in the NFL, and they have the secondary that can man up, you know, an A.J. Brown and whoever else they tried out there. I mean, even if Julio Jones doesn't play. Is this finally the Derrick Henry comes back to earth game here where – you can't just pencil him in for a baseline of 100 rushing yards and at least one rushing touchdown?
I mean, what they don't have anything else. So,
but listen, you run into a brick wall, you know, 35 times. I mean, you might get 30 yards.
With him, you keep bashing him into the brick wall. I get where you're going, and I don't disagree with you at all.
I think this is the week. I think this is the fade Derrick Henry in DFS week. I don't think the volume is going to matter. The Bills are going to force their hand. And while no one forces the Titans' hand, it seems like they just keep running the ball. They did it against your Seattle Seahawks when they were down like 20 points in a game. They just kept handing the ball up to Derrick Henry until victory. I don't envision that happening against Buffalo. They have a deep, you know, rotation on their D-line, and they're going to force Ryan Tannehill to beat them throwing the ball. I think this is finally the week, but just wanted to touch on that. And then when we jump back, you apologized to everyone for Robert Woods. Robert Woods was wide receiver 8 last week. That Thursday night football game, he squeaky wheeled it. McVay came out and said, you know, I have to find ways to get him the ball. Well, that turned into 14 targets for 12 catches and 150 yards. So he actually pushed Cooper Kupp down for a week, who only had 7 for 92. Neither of them scored on the week. Your boy Higbee scored, who, while you're saying disappointing, yeah, he's been disappointing. He largely got shut down until he took advantage of the aforementioned Jamal Adams on an end zone target. But you're right, these are so straightforward. Your boy Van Jefferson has been kind of a revelation, but he's not no one you can trust, you know, outside of bye weeks. But it still just is going to go Alpha Cooper Kupp. I think you can start Robert Woods again. I believe he is going to start getting the volume that he saw before. And then Darrell Henderson has just looked really – he's looked good. He's played very well when healthy. And Sony Michel has not siphoned away any valuable touches. Even the work that Sony got last week was because Darrell Henderson got like a stinger or something. He was off on the sideline like swinging his arm around, looked like he was trying to work something out. If Sony got that entire drive, which is also when he scored the touchdown, like 8 carries or 8 touches on a single drive. So don't look into the usage from last week as far as the Rams are concerned. This is Darrell Henderson's backfield as long as he's healthy.
Yeah, correct. That, not much there, despite the high total. I mean,
and the Giants we talked about earlier. Oh my gosh. Like, where do you go from here? I mean, it could be Mike Glennon throwing passes to Evan Ingram.
We'll get to them when we pivot to the low totals.
Yeah.
The only other team close to 28 is Baltimore. It's 27.25 is their projected total. Again, another narrow distribution tree. I know they got guys coming back from injury you want to see, but.
Holy moly. I mean, the Ravens against the Chargers? This is the game of the week.
Should be.
It is.
And that's the fourth highest total also.
You cannot tell me that Lamar Action Jackson threw 400 yards and 4 touchdowns against the future. Justin Herbert is going to be anything less than spectacular. Herbert just went toe-to-toe with Baker Mayfield's run game and put up, 85 points? This is an over if ever I saw it. This is not going to disappoint. 50 is way too low in this game.
Yeah, I got a 51.5, but yeah, that's
too low. 60, John.
61.
This is a 61-er, buddy.
He's going over.
I'm going over. Your boy Mike Williams again.
Oh boy.
Just put his dick on the table. Just let everyone know what type of a man he is. He was wide receiver 2 on the week, 8 for 165 and 2, only felled by Devontae Adams' 206-yard effort. He's just had one dud so far, and he's been a one the other 4 weeks of the season. There will be a shift. Keenan Allen is going to happen eventually. Teams are just going to overcorrect on Mike Williams, and then Keenan Allen just going to eat them alive underneath. But it hasn't happened yet, and I'm not gonna paint the Ravens, who just let Michael Pittman have a game against them. 6 for 89 and a touchdown on only 7 targets. I mean, a similar type big-bodied wide receiver to Mike Williams. This is another fire up your Mike Williams game. Your boy Austin Eckler has looked amazing, even getting carried into the end zone for a third touchdown on the week, which I take a little bit of issue with, people saying he wasn't trying to score on Twitter. If you're not really trying to score, you would have taken a knee. He was just trying to milk the clock. Like, stop trying to look so upset that you got pushed into the end zone at the end. You could have controlled the outcome of that play to a greater degree. Yeah, you would just you shrug it out a little too far, and the Browns did what they were supposed to do in that situation to get the ball back. So congratulations to all the fantasy owners, you know, that benefited from Eckler's running back 1 performance in week 5. It was a beautiful thing, and more in store because he's special.
Yeah. So moving from the good to the bad here, starting with the bums, working our way down. Chicago Bears looking at 20.5 is their total this week, failing to get 3 touchdowns, hosting the Green Bay Packers. sometimes just the Bears-Packers rivalry, the Bears show up at home. I don't think that's happening this week. They look terrible. Not a surprise to me. There's nobody here I'm confidently playing at all.
Yeah, I mean, the Green Bay defense, 17th in pass DVOA, and it's probably going to be declining without Jair Alexander, but they're 29th in rush DVOA. So I feel relatively confident with Damian Williams. I really liked what I saw out of Khalil Herbert, who was a pre-draft favorite of mine and a post-draft
because he landed. I know I saw the box score, but I haven't watched any video of him yet. Did he look good?
They ran pretty effectively. I mean, they pretty much seemed like had that game in hand early against the Raiders, and it wasn't really putting on much of a fight. We still got nothing from Justin Fields in the run game, so I'm still waiting for the Bears to step into the modern century and actually use these athletic quarterbacks like they should be. I mean, Justin Fields is getting – I'm drawing a total blank. Who's the Jaguars quarterback? Trevor Lawrence is getting more design run plays called for him than Justin Fields is. I mean, this is just – it's asinine. They're going to have to open up the offense and open him up a little bit if they want to compete with Green Bay. They had two decent matchups for Fields so far in the Lions and the Raiders. Now it's going against Green Bay in a game where 4.5 seems a bit tight. I guess they're relying on that Bears defense, but – can Justin Fields throw the ball more than 20 times? I mean, is that an option? The offense is narrow enough that could feed Allen Robinson and Darnell Mooney. It wasn't going beyond that anyway. Cole Kmet's not going to happen this year. The running back maybe will get the targets, but we need to see 30-plus attempts and 10 carries from Justin Fields in a game, and I think this is the one for it to happen. I don't know what the outcome's going to be, but they can't live on him just throwing the ball 20 times against the Green Bay Packers.
I get a lot of this falls on Nagy. I understand there are other problems in place. I didn't think he was going to be good. Granted,
you didn't like him to begin with. So,
what are your thoughts on him now? So far,
I mean, he has areas he needs to grow. I don't think this offense is ideal for him. I didn't think it was. When he was drafted, I knew the opportunity would be there because Andy Dalton wasn't going to stand in his way for long. I'm not a Matt Nagy believer. I think he was a byproduct of the Andy Reid OC coaching tree, an undeserving one at that. And I don't know that Bill Lazor is as forward thinking as I would want from an OC that is being tasked with maximizing the skill set of a Justin Fields, because it needs, at least they push the ball downfield more. I'll give them that. They push the ball downfield more against the Raiders, and they're going to have to do so against Green Bay. So look for splash plays, but they got to get Fields out of the pocket. They need to use his athleticism. He needs to run the ball. There needs to be designed runs involved, in a Chicago Bears offense going forward for him to be even a decent NFL quarterback and successful, and then to be a valuable fantasy football quarterback. So I still have the same opinion I did of him before. He was my QB3 in this rookie class. It was Lawrence, Lance, Fields, and then it was Zach Wilson and Mac Jones. But a lot of that's predicated on upside. Lance and Fields were kind of placeholders for a lot of people just because of what they bring rushing and what that's worth in fantasy football these days. So this will be a good barometer. This game will be a barometer because they are going to have to chase points against Green Bay. And Green Bay isn't a world beater defense either, as stated. Middle of the pack on pass DVOA, bad rush DVOA. So you should be able to put up points against the Green Bay Packers in this one. And you're at home.
Moving from my former backyard of Chicago to my current backyard, Las Vegas, the Raiders now 20.5, second tied for the Bears for the fourth lowest of the week. A lot going on in Raiderville. No,
I was
going
to say, we totally glossed over, the news of the day.
I mean, it goes one of two ways, and I don't know what it probably looks like shit this week. I'm not playing any Raiders at all if I can avoid it, but this week's probably going to be a lot of confusion and conundrums, and then going forward, they're either going to, rally around this and end up having a nice run for the rest of the year, or they just fall to pieces. My bet is on the fall to pieces one. but I don't, this is just a mess, and I'm not playing anybody this week. I mean, obviously Gruden is the whole architect of this team and this offense. 20.5 might be far too high in week one.
Yeah, I mean, this is be interesting to see how this Raiders team looks a year from now. I mean, it was clear that Gruden got to do whatever he wanted with this. He was puppeting Mayock around all these draft picks. He was crafting the team, in his image, turning over entire offensive lines, kind of quietly behind the scenes, like a huge Derek Carr supporter. And now that golden umbrella, that golden parachute is gone. Yeah. Be interested to see what these Raiders look like a year from now. And can they get Darren Waller back involved again? I mean, he had a massive week one, 10 for 105 and a touchdown. And on the season, he's holding at tight end 5, but he's only got 319 and 2 touchdowns on 28 catches. So he has 18 for, what I say, for 214 and a touchdown in the other 4 weeks. It's just 50 yards and a quarter of a touchdown per game. I mean, he's still living off of that first week from where he is, and he is by far their best offensive asset. He should consistently be seeing 10-plus targets per game. He should by far lead the position. He is at 48 targets. He should have like 58 at least at this point of season. 60 targets through 5 games. 12 targets a game is nothing for that guy, clearly, when you're not going to trust Henry Ruggs or Bryan Edwards with any type of volume.
Not good.
But we're going to see a shit ton of runs from Josh Jacobs this week. That I can assure you, with this special teams coordinator being elevated to the head coach position, they're just going to try and stabilize, everything that they can. Yeah. And the Denver Broncos, 13th pass DVOA, 10th rush DVOA. So it's not going to be easy for them either. This is a game that the Broncos have to be licking their chops against a division rival that has all this uncertainty going.
And it's third lowest total.
And it's at home.
Week.
I mean, on the Denver side, listen, Teddy Bridgewater came back and he made Cortland Sutton a thing. So that's good for everyone. That should continue to happen. No one else, not running backs, no other receivers. I mean, Fant, you're kind of thrust into, but yeah.
Although there's a chance there, like I said, there's a chance the Raiders just fall to pieces. If this game ended up being 38-7, Denver, I wouldn't be surprised.
Not one bit. I mean, no one does dysfunction like the Raiders do.
moving up or down the list, however you want to word it. Also tied for second fewest points this week, New York Giants. We've kind of mentioned their name a few times, just dysfunction, and they're just beat to shit. Kenny Galladay, I just looked, is already listed as doubtful. So
Well, for his career, it's a new tag. It's a career doubtful tag. I mean, they're stepping their game up in New York.
Doubtful, as we know in the NFL, means out. Yeah. So he ain't playing. So, Kadarius Toney and Mike Glennon and Devontae Booker. There's a reason this total's 18.5. Might be a little too generous.
Listen,
you mentioned Booker in the beginning and how he could be just volume-based playable, and Tony might fall into the same situation, but there's nobody else. Even Evan Ingram, I don't want to trust this week.
You can't. I mean, who even knows if Daniel Jones will get through the concussion protocol? And to say that
– I'm just assuming Glennon's playing. I'm not even
– until further notice. But listen, Teddy Bridgewater made it through the protocol, and I thought for sure Drew Locke was going to be playing last week. So – stranger things have happened, but the Daniel Jones concussion was a scary one, so they may even just not give him, even if he clears, maybe just give him an extra week in a unlikely spot against the Rams. Just, Joe Judge just waving that white flag, running Mike Glennon out to slaughter. But Kadarius Toney looked good. I mean, dude undressed Trevon Diggs on a route where he got a cushion on a shallow route, unlike I've seen, where he looked like he was running across and then he cut it back outside, and Trevon Diggs was on skates. And I think that's where he thrives. So if they can continue to do that with him, he's going to be an interesting little asset, especially in PPR leagues. And I wasn't a crazy Kadarius Toney guy. I thought the Giants reached for him. I think everyone, including NFL pundits, thought that the Giants reached for him because they wanted Devonta Smith and scrambled and picked Toney later on. But he looked damn good. So I got to give them credit that they're going to have to throw it a lot against the Rams, but it's, that Rams defense is better than what he saw a week ago. And so I temper expectations, but he's going to get the targets.
I mean, I think Ramsey mainly covers the slot. So it depends kind of where they line Toney up, but With the other weapons in the passing game, you could see a world where they put fucking Ramsey shadow covering him, and then that's the end of that.
Yeah, I mean, Ramsey doesn't shadow cover anymore, but if there was ever a week, it would be this week.
That's what I'm saying.
Where you have Colin Johnson and Chris Board running just fly routes against air.
It doesn't make sense not to.
No.
He's the only threat in the passing game, so how do you not put him on him? But anyway, moving on to the next
What did Evan Engram do last week? Nothing? I didn't even look.
He did something. I saw him.
Where is he? He caught all four of his targets for 55 yards. I mean, that's an all-timer for Evan Engram. I think the first time
he's got 9 PPR. That's his thing.
100% reception rate. That's probably the first time in his career he's caught everything thrown his way. But, hey, in this world of volume and touchdown upside, you could do worse than an Evan Engram. But I'm not opposed to setting him or leaving him on your waiver wire either.
Also tied for 18.5 projected points, the Seattle Seahawks. So we got little Bears action in here, Raiders action. So yeah, I'm tying all my loose ends together with the
John
shitty
has
end of the stick here. Yeah. 18.5. This is largely because who knows what's going on with Chris Carson's injury. And of course, Russell Wilson is out. This is the newly minted Geno Smith-led Seattle Seahawks offense. Until you see what he could do for a full game, you really can't trust anybody here. Again, bye weeks are hitting. If you have Metcalf, you probably have no choice but to play him. And he hit Metcalf in the game and was looking for him. Metcalf, I think, is safer than Lockett based off the little bit of garbage we saw, you know, in the half of a game last week. But you can't feel confident with anybody right now.
No, and for those of you living under a rock, Russell Wilson is going to miss the next, they said at least a month, more likely the next 6 to 8 weeks with a ruptured middle finger tendon that did require surgery. So Geno Smith is going to be the entrenched starter for the next 2 months, we shall say, which is the bulk of the rest of the fantasy regular season. So it's going to be ugly. You have temper expectations on the entire Seattle offense. I feel like Chris Carson was close to playing, but it was a short week, so they shelled him. I would expect him to be back this week, but that Seattle offensive line was already bad, and now you don't have to be afraid of the quarterback at all. Pittsburgh is just going to be bearing down on them all day, and we'll probably limit Chris Carson even if he does come back. So it's unfortunate. This injury is just such a ripple effect through a number of fantasy assets on a team.
Here's a question for you. In Superflex, Geno Smith, are you looking to acquire him or are you looking to trade him away if you have him?
Oh, if I already had him, I'm trading away, but I'm looking to acquire just for that reason, that the value of a quarterback in Superflex, that if I have the fab to acquire, then I would be trying to trade him away. I mean, he's clearly not a long-term asset. You know, it depends how deep your super flex is, that, you know, most people don't keep the backup quarterback even for their own starter. And some of these crazy leagues I'm in where third string quarterbacks are rostered in the league. But if
I got Geno and too much Geno actually. So I'm curious to see.
I would be moving off of him right away. I think he looked, you know, like respectable in his spot start. Like, imagine just coming in as cold could be. Like, that dude hasn't started a game in what, like 7 years?
He played a game in 2018, but like full time.
Yeah, I mean, he's just sitting over there. Russell Wilson doesn't miss snaps or games. I mean, that's just things that didn't happen until now. So Geno Smith thought he had the cushiest backup job of all time, right? Just hanging out in the Great Northwest. Yeah, holding a stellar clipboard for a guy that just never comes off the field. Probably doesn't even see practice reps, for Christ's sake. Like, now he's thrust into this. I was impressed with how well he navigated the offense early. Even his pick, Tyler Lockett, tripped. He got his feet caught up.
A bad pick.
No, it didn't look like a good pass regardless. It wasn't where he should have thrown it. Looked like he was kind of keying on Lockett, you know, going into the play, but it wasn't egregious. It wasn't like an ugly interception to ruin the, you know, to cost him the game. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he can keep these guys viable, but their upside is gone. Geno Smith isn't uncorking 60-yard, 70-yard touchdowns to Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. This is going to be more volume-driven now, where those guys are just clearly going to eat the majority of targets from Geno Smith. He's not looking at these tight ends. He's not going to Freddie Swaim. He's not doing any of that. I mean, the running backs a little bit. He is just going to hyper-target DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So maybe it's not the end of the world for them. But I think it's the end for Seattle. They should lose to a subpar Pittsburgh team this week. And yeah. I know they, well, given their division, they're going to have a tough schedule coming up. So
that's the lowest total of the week, too, at 42.
Yeah. I mean, and rightfully so. Pittsburgh's not really scaring anyone. Yeah. They want to win this game like 23-10. That's what Pittsburgh wants to do in this game. They just lost Juju for the year. So at least that's going to consolidate.
Is that official?
Party. Yeah. I mean, he's done on IR and he had shoulder surgery. They haven't, quote unquote, said he's done for the year, but you know, that was an early report. I can't see him playing again because I don't think Pittsburgh's going to be a playoff team. So why are him or the team going to rush him back?
Yeah, I mean, you could see him rushing back because he took that fucking 1 year deal and wants to showcase a little skills for money. But
I'd be focusing on my rehab and recovery and hitting the market. I'm not rushing back out there to get fucked up again and cause myself tens of millions of dollars. He already did call himself tens of millions of dollars.
Boy didn't. You know,
anymore. So it's an unfortunate for Juju, but no, obviously it's Najee Harris time in Pittsburgh.
And as we like to do here, closing on a whimper. And this is another one. We're seeing a pattern here, I think, week in and week out. The Houston Texans at the Indianapolis Colts. Second lowest total of the week, 42.5. Houston projected for an abysmal 16.25, and I don't ever recall seeing a projected total under 17 too often. So this is a special kind of garbage, and which is weird because they didn't look too awful last week. So you'd think this is the week they get a little bump up, and it's not like they're facing a world-beating defense in the Colts. So of all the shitty teams we went through, Houston to me is the most appealing of this group.
100%. I'm actually shocked by this. I mean, did people not see Davis Mills cut up the Patriots, that secondary that Tom Brady couldn't cut up the week
and Indy looked like shit until last night.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
why are they a 10-point? Indy's a 10-point home favorite.
Yeah, listen, Indy went toe-to-toe with the Baltimore Ravens. Carson Wentz looked like vintage Carson Wentz, even on, you know, an unfortunate, you know, sack fumble, but he played very well. I'm shocked by this line. 312 and three touchdowns by Davis Mills, and didn't have anything to do with Brandon Cooks, which I said was the sit Brandon Cooks week. So amazingly enough that he was able to do that without much from Brandon Cooks. This line does surprise me. Indy is, where am I looking at here? 30th in pass defense DVOA, second against a run. So Houston doesn't run anyway, so that's a good thing. But they're bad against the pass. I mean, in Lamar Jackson just exposed the shit out of them on Monday Night Football. So I'm not a Davis Mills fan, and I sure shit aren't a Houston Texans fan. I'm a little surprised by this. I think Houston can move the ball and score. I mean, the Colts don't even have a good pass rush, to be totally honest with you. So I'm not saying go start Davis Mills at a Superflex league, but yeah, this line seems a little out of bounds for me.
Yeah, this one makes no – I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
Yeah, that's strange.
And I think yeah, this whole game's out of whack. I think Indy's way too big of a favorite, and I think the total overall is too low, and I think Houston's projected for way too low. It's a very strange one. But I like Houston. I mean, you're obviously not trusting the running backs. This is going to go through can't believe we're at this point in the season already. This offense is going to go through David Mills. So I didn't get his name right. It's Davis, isn't it?
No, you nailed it. The respect he deserves. Listen, David Mills. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, very shocked by that outcome. I thought that the Patriots were just going to have a field day with this kid, and they didn't. I mean, it was a lot of trickery. I mean, I think Houston finally said, like, fuck it. Let's throw out that first playbook and just come back with the Sandlot shit. And it worked. But I can't see why it wouldn't work again against a team that gives it up versus the pass. Houston, conversely, is 30th in run defense DVOA. So you got to think another massive Jonathan Taylor game, even though most of what Jonathan Taylor did against the Ravens was on one pass through the air, but still a game they should be leading throughout. And this could be a running back 1 week for Jonathan Taylor. another
fascinating
one,
time to be alive.
I mean, that's just bonkers. I'm glad we ended it there, as much as we've shit on the Houston Texans, to like oddly support them in this low total moment, as we're, you know, touching on the lowest totals of the week. They deserve better. I mean, Indianapolis, you know, they're showing a little spunk, they got a little fight, but they're not world beaters. You know why? Because it's in Indy. I mean, Indy's got a short week. They just played on Monday Night Football. Now it's a division game. You know, you expect it to be a little bit tight, and then Houston went ahead and surprised in a game that they could have won against the Patriots on Sunday. So, yeah, I'm optimistic about some of these Houston pass. Well, nah, probably just Brandon Cooks. I'm not starting Chris Conley or anyone else they called passes last week. But yeah, I'm not going to go too far in this one. But yeah, I think I'm going to be putting a couple bucks on at least a Houston teaser. If you're going to be that generous with me, and I can add a little cherry on top there, mm-hmm. I'm going to be a Texan fan this weekend.
What are you talking about? I mean, you're looking at teasers. You get the you want to go 7 points. You get Houston getting 17. And get Kansas City plus a half.
Yeah. So, listen, I fell for that trap before with Kansas City, where I teased them down to that plus a half, and then they lost a goddamn game outright. I forget who it was too, but
in there,
I'm like, oh, well, that's easy money right there. But yeah, I might have to go back to the well against Washington, because it would be, you know, signal flares being fired off in Kansas City if they're to lose another one of these games that they look like the clear better team going into Washington. So yeah, might have to do that, sir, and sprinkle in a little Tampa even as well if we're doing 7-point teasers, because there's zero chance they lose in Philadelphia on Thursday Night Football.
Well, that should do it. Closing on a whimper, as we like to do here, is fantastic. It was a good one, though.
It was. It was. Like I said, defending Houston is not how I thought that this podcast was going to end. But we didn't touch on Arizona-Cleveland. That does have a 50.5-point game total. I guess it's because they didn't meet either of your thresholds. But that's a high game total. And Cleveland has no problem getting into these high-scoring games at this point in time. Arizona and a nail-biter, and thoroughly disappointed all my Kyler Murray teams in that San Fran game, where – they just looked like they knew they weren't going to have to do much to beat the Niners with Trey Lance under center. So they just didn't really try too hard. But 5-0 going to Cleveland, who just lost a heartbreaking game to the Chargers on Sunday. I was a little intrigued there about a higher scoring affair. But in the leagues where I have Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson, you know, Lamar Jackson made that decision easy for me. But what he did on Monday night, Kyler's going to find the bench against the Browns, and I'm going to be riding with my boy Lamar Jackson in what I expect to be another shootout game against the Chargers. But that was just another one that when I see that high total, I always expect we're going to talk about it. But I know we talk team totals, not game totals.
Sprinkle those in there. But, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't impressed with Arizona this last week, and Cleveland
has not at all
propensity to throw some stinkers out there. So it's not – this could easily – you know, end up with the total in the fucking 30s if things break poorly in this game. So,
and I wouldn't be shocked.
It could also be fucking 40-something to 40-something.
I mean, I know Cleveland wants to slow it down. You know, they probably want to keep Arizona's offense off the field. Arizona's got a good pass DVOA, surprisingly enough. They're average against the run. When Cleveland's bad against the pass and average and good against the run, honestly. So, it's going to probably have to be through the air. You know, I doubt it's going to be James Conner toting the mail, you know, for a victory for these Arizona Cardinals, you know, even against one of his old rivals that he probably knows pretty well. But just want to see if Cleveland can keep pace again. It's crazy how they stay in games with this run-based offense. I mean, it's literally like to be in a game with an 80-point total and you're like still running the ball in the fourth quarter to catch up. That's just insane to me.
It's definitely something.
It's not built to last, but it's at least entertaining for right now.
Yes. So that should do it for myself, John DeBarry, my co-host, Mr. Matt Walker. Friends over at Expand the Box Score, be sure to check them out. Promo code 40. We are the Fantasy 40, and we are out of here. I mean, the thing is, Even right after I heard it, I could always walk. Walking's fine. I just have no fucking lateral movement.
Oh, I vividly remember you talking to the doctor saying, now if I had to D you up.
Yeah. So that's the same thing. And even like, but I realize that, you know, part of it too, I'm becoming an old man. In this Listen. Fucking, it's never going to be, believe me, I saw.
All right, thanks, John. Yeah. Get socks on too.
Yeah, my ankle's just not, it's never going to be better. I mean, the surgery will clean it up and hopefully help a little bit, but it's always going to be fucked up.
Yeah, I was like, well, I said something, I was like, yeah, the hands and feet just still hurt. And she's like, you're old. I was like, oh, well, I feel as though I should have another good 30 in me. I feel like that's now. It was going to be like 5 years ago. Yeah, 5, 10 years ago, I was going to be a bitch.
If I live fucking, if I'm literally halfway and I make it into my 80s, what am I going to feel like every day then?
Oh, be ugly. They better come out with a magic pill.
Yeah, well, they do matrix. For guys. You just go get fucking low test. Go get testosterone shots.
That helps feeling achy and sore all the time?
I think it helps with everything.
Really? It's just just a magic bullet? The low T magic bullet? Okay.
Yeah, little testosterone and growth hormone, and you're fucking flying like you're 20 again.
All right. Well, I mean, I'll take just feeling like I'm 30 again.
Yeah. I'll take 39.
Yeah. I'm feeling like I'm 55 right now. I'm sure I can find someone to drill a hole in my head, like the old school way they used to like release migraines and all. Just literally, just freaking old school drill right in the old cranium, release some of that pressure.
For sure, they do. I've seen the people that go to like Tijuana, and they think they're getting butt implant. I'm going to get the Brazilian butt implant. I've seen stories where fucking these guys, quote unquote, doctors. Yeah. In a hotel room and they're putting
cement, legit cement.
Cement somebody's ass. And they're like, good luck, put some ice on it and good luck in America. And they run away with your $500.
Yep. Yeah. Like I said, there's always, you can always find someone. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
put some cement in your ass.
What's like, I've never been on a cruise. You ever do a cruise?
No.
It's like those cruises that go through the Caribbean. They stop in Haiti, but they go to the one port called
Port da Safe.
It's got a fucking goofy name. But there's the one part in Haiti where all the cruise ships go, and it's like, yeah, that's the only place we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not going to the fucking.
You're not going to the dark side of the island.
Yeah, where they're eating fucking the dirt cookies and.
Yeah, where Lost was filmed. Yeah.
Yes.
Smoke monsters and psychopaths.
So the point is, that's where you're getting your implant.
That's where you're getting your trinkets from.
Correct.
All right.
Any besides Gruden? Any other news?
Yeah, I mean, more like Scruton, huh? Am I right, John?
Hey-o. All right.
Smacked the dick off of Mike Yek last week, too.
That a boy.
Ah, yeah. Just rub his nose in it a bit. Yeah. He got Mark Andrews on Monday night. That was like the old Teddy KGB at the end, just sticking it in.
I didn't have any surprises come up, but I put in the off the rails league. I don't know if you looked at other people's scores. I was playing Brian Haar, and I was kicking the fuck out of him. Mm-hmm. He had Wentz, Lamar Jackson, Jonathan Taylor, and he may have had Andrews. He scored like fucking, I was beating the balls out of
him. That's like 120 points right there.
Yes, but I still won because I was killing him. But I was I go, these guys all have to have career days for me to catch. It was at least Taylor, Wentz, and fucking Jackson. I don't know if he had.
Those quarterbacks alone were over 80. I mean, they're both, regardless of scoring, were both over 40 points. Yeah, Taylor was probably in the 30s. So that's like 110 just from them three.
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up beating him by a very slim margin, but I was like, oh my God, he's going to catch me and beat me. This is no good.
I in a league I finally got my first. But there's a couple leagues that I'm fully embracing the tank right now. I've actually started insulting the entire league on the group chat every time I win a game, because I'm like, you guys are not doing your job here. I am trying to lose. I was 2-2 going into the week, and two of the teams, the last two I played, they like stunk, and it wasn't even like they made bad decisions. Their team was just somehow worse. And so I congratulated the guy this week on finally being able to take down a tanking team and get me back under 500.
Yeah, I keep fucking... couple of my tank teams just aren't tanking.
Like, there's two leagues. There's one league I'm 0-5 and one league I'm 1-4. And one of them was fully intentional. And the other one was not. My team's not even bad. Every time I look, I'm like, shit, I lost again. Like, I have a good team here. Like, it's just not working, you know, like for whatever reason. With all these injuries just starting to pile up, I had a ton of Tua. You know, I have Deshaun Watson literally everywhere, like every single league. So I'm already like one hand tied behind my back in any of these super flex leagues with him. So it's some of them is just kind of forced. Like if he ain't playing, I can't win this league. So there's 0% chance, there's zero reason to even try. Like might as well just race to the bottom, try and get draft picks, come back out fighting again. Yeah. But let's rock.
All right.